This, my friends, is a story. A story called The First Communion. The first time I play a home video game, it is quite literally a religious experience. When we were very little, my mom had a group of kids over to our house, but I had no idea why. Jeff and I are told to stay in our room, but we both sneak out to see what is going on. They're all sitting in a circle in the living room, reading from some weird little brightly colored books. My brother and I peer at them from the shadows, just behind the edge of the couch, in the hallway, with the light fixture that only works some of the time. Later, when we ask, my mom explains that she was teaching CCD class, which has something to do with the large Catholic church we attend on most Sundays. Like many of the things my mom tries out, it doesn't last very long, maybe 6 months or a year, and then there's nary a mention of it ever again in our house, like it never existed. We do attend Catholic Mass on most Sundays, though, but my dad is not into it. In fact, he actively avoids it. I figure it was just something to do to get us out of the house and waste time between the Channel 5 Tom Hatton Popeye show in the morning and the Channel 9 Horror Film Festival in the afternoon. That is until the second grade, when my mom tells us that we are indeed Catholic and that it is our duty to attend CCD class ourselves. The class is a weekly one-hour session with kids our age that is designed to prepare us for the second most important Catholic sacrament, First Communion. This, in and of itself, is not terrible news. Falling in love with Star Wars earlier that year has opened the door for me to accept the nature of our dualistic morality in the universe. Even though I've been to church many times before Star Wars, the mythology laid out in the simple story of good and evil turned me into a sponge for morality tales. It feels genuine to me, but also scary, because for the first time, I'm thinking about death. What strikes me most is the uncertainty. Not much is neat and tidy in the Catholic teachings. Jesus looks like a hippie, he loves everyone, and he turns the other cheek. That seems pretty cool to me. In the Gospels, though, people make mistakes, people are punished, things don't always work out as planned, but there is always a path. This seems far different from the utopian, homogenized people yelling about God on Sunday morning TV. A little bit of chaos, a little bit of hope to get through it all. I can deal with that. It makes sense. It feels a bit like Star Wars. Obi-Wan Kenobi died for Luke. Jesus died for us. Those X-Wing pilots died for their cause. I would die someday too. And what would I die for? Anything? Jeff and I happily attend our CCD class throughout second grade. It's held a few blocks away from us in a nice lady's house. Every week we get together with a bunch of other kids and read passages from four brightly colored books named the Gospels, while eating cookies and drinking Hawaiian punch that is supplied by each kid's family through a round robin snack schedule. It is economical and, dare I say, fun. I learn a little bit about the stuff the priest says on Sunday morning. All feels right with the world. However, one thing I noticed during the year is that there are no other kids from our grade in the CCD class. In fact, some of the kids I recognize from first grade. There's an obvious reason for this that I only discover later. My mom and dad did not agree about us attending CCD. My dad was staunchly opposed. When he finally gives in, it was an entire year too late. That means that, as second graders, we'll be stuck with a bunch of younger kids for a long time in CCD class. Each year of CCD is in a different person's house. The teacher the second year lives further away, and the time conflicts with my sister Mari's guitar lesson. So for the second year, my mom has arranged for us to carpool with a younger kid who lives up the street. Neither of us are happy about this. At 8 years old, a one-year difference is not just huge, it's giant. And there's more. She's a girl. Could it be any worse? No. In fact, it got better. Much, much better. The Turns out the second grader is a nice girl from up the street named Lori. Lori lives in a house a bit smaller than ours. She lives with her mom and her grandmother. Her dad is nowhere to be found, and no utterance of his existence is ever made. The first day of our first CCD meeting of our second year, my brother Jeff and I walk up the street to Lori's house. We arrive about a half an hour early, and Lori's mom leads us into Lori's room, where she is busy pressing the letters on a yellow and red box with a digital display, with rows and rows of buttons with letters on them.
H-O-U-S-E,
whines the electronic voice from the box. House. The thing talked. The name of the box says speak and spell. I look around Lori's room. I've never seen anything like it. She has a robot in one corner with the name 2XL written on the front. Electronic games are scattered all around. She has her own radio and her own TV set. It's like the basement of Sears come to life in front of my eyes. The most amazing thing in her room, though, the thing that eventually will make me never want to leave her house, is the wood-paneled, heavy sixer, first edition Atari VCS video game console hooked up to her TV. Ten game cartridges and colorful boxes are scattered around the floor. The boxes have amazing paintings on the cover and enticing names like Combat, Air Sea Battle, Indy 500, Surround, Video Olympics, Starship, Street Racer, and Outlaw. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I've cataloged the name Atari as synonymous with video games. The Pong machines in the Sears basement, the arcade games at the Old Town Mall, advertisements in Soccer Now or Boys Life, the Sears video arcade version of the Atari VCS in the Sears Wishbook. I know instantly what it is, and I'm instantly drawn to it. What I do not know yet, however, is just how inclined I will be to fall in love with it. Street Racer is on the console already, and Lori shows Jeff and I how to start a two-player game by pressing the select button to cycle through the game variations on the cartridge. She stops at one of her favorite games and hands us each a small, boxy controller with a wheel on it, connected by a wire to the console. Later, I understand that these are called paddles. I look on the back of the Street Racer box and notice the names of the games printed on the outside. Lori has stopped on variation number 22. Apparently, the game is named Number Cruncher. What happened next is the wildest head-to-head game Jeff and I have ever played in our lives. At the bottom of the screen, there's a little set of blocks that represent a car. I know it has to be a car because the front of the Street Racer box has some really cool paintings of classic cars gunning for a race. The screen is split down the middle, and we are both playing at the same time. When the game starts, numbers fall from the top of the screen. By hitting them with my car directly in front, the value of the number is added to my score. However, if I hit them from the side, my car will smash with a stomach-churning sound, and everything stops. If I press the red button on the side of the controller, the numbers speed up. This means I can score more points faster, but also makes it much easier to smash up. Jeff and I have been playing games together for years, but most of them have had an air of unfairness about them. We never really knew who won at guns because you couldn't really tell who was hit. We never knew who won a close bike race because there was an inevitable dispute about where the finish line was. We even had disputes about tennis racket baseball because it is not always clear where balls land when they hit the garage. Yet here, sitting side by side, playing Street Racer on the Atari VCS, there can be no disputes. The machine keeps the score, keeps the rules, and keeps it all fair. In a word, this is a revelation. We have a little time for one more game after Street Racer. Lori unplugs the paddles and plugs in two joysticks into ports on the front of the console. She turns off the power, unplugs Street Racer, and puts in a game named Combat. She selects a game and pushes reset. At that moment, she and I are thrown into a virtual battleground, each controlling a tank, shooting at each other. I realize then that I've seen this game before, running on a TV in the basement of Sears. The battlefield is abstract, but the tanks look more accurate than the cars in Street Racer. However, no matter how it actually looks on the screen, the art on the box for combat sets the tone. It shows a set of tanks in a furious battle, and to me, the two images, screen and box, are cemented together forever. The game I am playing was the box art, no matter what showed up on the screen. The 30 minutes before CCD are up too soon. We carpool with Lori every week from then on. We always arrive a half an hour early each time, and all three of us play Atari. Required reading in CCD class is four Gospels, many brightly colored books that represent the biblical Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We received them the first day of our first year. They are the same books my mom used when she taught CCD. I'm no expert, but I think my mom told me that the Catholic Church was not too keen on their parishioners reading the entire Bible, so instead they prepackaged and marketed the parts they thought would have the biggest impact. These books are designed to teach us 70s kids that Jesus was a cool dude who helped the sick, fed the hungry, and fought for what was right. At least, that's what I'm getting out of it anyway. While these books represent what I was supposed to be learning, their message is entwined. Every week we play Atari at Lori's house and pull games out of brightly colored boxes. Then we carpool with her to CCD where we read passages from brightly colored Gospels. I accept the latter because I'm finding myself drawn to the former. In third grade, we are learning a Gospel all right. A message is certainly getting across, but it might not be the same message my mom intended. We may have been lured at first by Atari and all of Lori's other cool toys, but it was nice to have a regular friend who lived close by that we could play with on a regular basis. By early 1979, Jeff and I are hanging out at Lori's house before and after CCD class, and on the weekends too. In fact, the three of us pretty much become inseparable. Some of this is a way to escape our own house. Gramps has lung cancer now from smoking a pipe his entire life. My dad has been rifling through all of his prevention magazines to try to find a natural cure. He is planning a trip to Mexico to get his dad cancer medication that has not been approved by the FDA in the United States. He says something about Laetril, apparently a cancer cure created from apricot pits or something. Dad has gone a lot now, visiting his own dad and trying to figure out how to save him. My mom is in a deep depression too, about the death of Aunt Pat and Cousin Greg. Lori's house is a welcome respite from the darkness we all are feeling down the street. As the months wear on, our friendship with Lori branches out. There's always an Atari session in those visits, and Lori's mom expands her game library to include Human Cannonball, bowling, and more. Lori hardly ever comes to our house, though. There's nothing for her to do there except play in the driveway, so we spend an inordinate amount of time up the street with her. The outside is the main domain at our house, with our overgrown, walled regular backyard filled with decaying vehicles, our long, cracked suburban driveway where almost everything significant occurs. Our house is the domain of the old. Lori's house is all about the inside, the new world, electronic toys, video games, pay TV. Lori's house is set up to accept and play in this new world. It's an alternative to our house. We watch select TV movies with her and her mom on Friday nights. One night we all sit down and watch an age-inappropriate Corvette Summer with Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill. CCD this is not. If there are any three friends who could be called best friends in 1978, it is Jeff and I and Lori. It is the first time I've ever experienced this in my entire life. We attend Lori's 8th birthday party in 1979. Her mom buys her a slew of new Atari cartridges. Jeff and I arrive at the party early, and the three of us jump into playing the VCS. However, as more people arrive at the party, Jeff and Lori go to the backyard to join everyone else on the new swing set, but I find myself unable to move. I'm caught in the clutches of a game named Breakout, and I cannot escape it. I know now that I'm not alone in my feeling for Breakout. Many years later, I discover a book by David Sudnow named Pilgrim in the Micro World. Sudnow spends many chapters of his book discussing his fascination with Breakout. The difference is that he discovered it when he was a grown man, and I discovered it when I was 9 years old. I think now that the game is a masterpiece, maybe the first real casual game, and certainly one of the most insanely addictive experiences ever conceived. It also erased the gap between man and machine. Sudnow wrote eloquently about the new human-machine interface when someone picked up a paddle and controller and started to play Breakout. He said, "How strange and utterly marvelous it was that in the very first moments with Breakout, one naturally transcends the artificial element without even noticing it." Similar to seeing Star Wars in a movie theater in 1977 when I was 7, I feel revolutionized again by playing Breakout. I'm 9 years old in 1979, playing a home video game on the floor of my Catholic CCD friend's bedroom, and I do not ever want to leave. The Atari logo is everywhere. It's on game boxes, game cartridges, game manuals, game catalogs. It's on the console itself. It's scattered all around the floor and around me. I'm in the middle of it all, sitting on my knees, hands clasped together, holding the paddle controller with both hands. From behind, it might look like I'm praying, but I'm playing, controlling the machine. Everything about Atari, from the art and color in game boxes to the catalogs, instruction manuals inside every box, from the shape, feel, and design of the console and cartridges to the joystick paddles, racing controllers, keypads, is just exciting. The controllers feel exciting to hold. The sound comes out of the TV engulfing me. It's new, weird, and wonderful. The games employ a diverse and odd and weird set of color schemes. There are no established rules yet as to what a video game can and cannot be. The sounds from the internal sound processor are not always appropriate for the games. In Air Sea Battle, an explosion sounds a bit like a squirting fart. But this is fine. This is accepted by me. The Atari VCS employs a simple hardware trick to create background graphics to save processing power. Most of the playfields are mirrored right to left. The worlds created are nearly always symmetrical then. Symmetry is an implanted aesthetic in my mind. The boxes for the games are not uniform. Each employs the color of a rainbow. The artwork on the boxes does not always show the actual gameplay. Instead, it displays an impressionistic version of the theme of the game. The catalog in each box shows an array of Atari VCS games available, and that uses hand-drawn screenshots to accompany sparsely colored cartoon images to highlight the game descriptions. Playing the Atari VCS does not feel real. I think now maybe that was the point. In the 1970s, video games are not trying to recreate reality. They are an alternative, a completely alternate universe of color, sound, action, design, symmetry. They are additive to my world instead of a reflection of it. I think now that maybe the Atari VCS expanded my mind. Every nuance of playing an Atari VCS in 1979 still lives inside me someplace. The Atari VCS Breakout box is yellowish orange. It fits somewhere between the dark orange box of Street Racer and the light yellow box of Video Olympics in the rainbow of Atari VCS cartridge boxes. The box art is one of the few early VCS games that shows some manner of game graphics on the front, a wall of rainbow colored bricks with some missing that have been knocked out by two illustrated human players battling it out. The sleek black cartridge, like most of the early Atari VCS games, simply says Breakout in lowercase on the top label. There is more text on the main label, but I never see it because the cartridge is nearly always in the machine with the label facing away from me. The manual is black with the same image as the box on the cover. There is no need to read the manual, as the game is one of the most intuitive ever created. The Atari catalog entry for the game has a cartoon of two prisoners knocking bricks out of their cell to escape. I'm not sure how that relates to the sports athletes on the front of the box. Maybe Atari's marketing department isn't exactly sure what the game is all about. The playfield, though, is symmetrical, with long horizontal lines of playfield graphics that form the brick wall to break out from. The player is a long, thin paddle at the bottom of the screen. The ball is, of course, a square of pixels. I begin playing and I'm hooked almost instantly. The elegant side-by-side movement of the paddle and the simple musical tones that emanate from the TV whenever the ball touches anything combine. They put me in a near hypnotic state. senses intensified when I hit the ball into the brown row of bricks. The action increases the ball speed and goes from pleasant to manic in an instant. Each time I hit the ball with a paddle, a sense of relief swells over me. It is quickly dislodged by fear as the ball hits a brick or wall and bounces back and races toward the bottom of the screen. Euphoria and horror trade places in less than a second. A musical score of my own design is created by the bouncing ball. It falls upon me. I break through the top of the brick wall. The ball begins the brick wall dancing act at the top of the screen. The game transcends into a totally different experience. How long will the ball stay in that top cavity? How much damage will it do to the wall while it's up there? The reward of the game comes not from winning, but from playing. Staying alive so that beautiful, euphoric, hypnotic feeling will not end. But I miss the ball when it comes back down, and it makes me angry. One more ball, one more game is all I care about that afternoon. I'm going to keep it going. I'm going to clear the screen of bricks. I need to. I have to. The limitations of the breakout world make me feel like I can master it. It is a direct contrast to the world of CCD, the world of the Catholic Church, the world of my sisters, my mom, and my dad. That's the reality where people die. That's the reality where things will never be the same. The real world, that is the world I'm passing through. It masters me. People are alive in the real world, like my cousin Greg and Aunt Pat. Then, while you are blissfully sleeping away, dreaming about AYSO soccer and your third grade B's report, they are taken from you forever. But the Atari VCS, that was something I felt I could master. The birthday party continues in the backyard, but I now don't remember any of it. The only reason I know I went outside is because I have a few photos from that day with all the kids around Lori's new jungle gym, and I'm in them. But I know, looking at those pictures, I want to be inside, with the game, with Breakout. Jeff and I continue to be good friends with Lori through our Catholic First Communion in May of 1979, and even through the next summer. However, by the fall, things changed. Lori continued on to third grade CCD, while Jeff and I skipped to fourth grade, so we can be with kids our own age and get our confirmation in eighth grade. We hang out every once in a while, but with no CCD excuse to get together, our visits become more and more infrequent until they evaporate completely. Our friendship then reveals itself to be a bit of a mirage. Maybe we weren't best friends. Maybe we were just a convenient way for Lori to have companions and for us to play Atari. The relationship morphs from best friends to a wave in the hallways to an occasional smile. Then Lori leaves our elementary school and starts Catholic school the next year. And after that, she appears to drop off the face of the planet entirely. But in that year of fourth grade, I still think about playing the Atari VCS often. My mind wanders around to those good days with Lori, CCD First Communion, and then meanders to our cousins. I think about how impossible it is to make the real world what I want. But playing Breakout, that's different. The rules were simple, defined, finite. In that world, I know I was in complete control of my little universe. And I also knew this. If I was good enough, I could make the game last as long as I wanted. Maybe even forever.